Okay, Hare Krishna, here we are in Radha Damodar Van, Radha Damodar's forest. And if you look at today's pictures of Radhe Shyam, you'll see Krishna Valley Kadamba flowers. They're just like the Kadamba flowers you read about or you can see in India. Not exactly. They're also round. Their size is sort of in between. In India, there's two types of Kadamba. There's small, and then there's the Raj Kadamba. And Kadamba flowers are much more dense. These are not as dense as those, but they have the same effect. And this afternoon I'm going to try and make for nighttime Radha Shamsundar a Kadamba flower garland. And I have a couple of questions here from a Fabri taught Christina. And she's saying that children are, you can say, tell Shyam Bihari that the offering is ready. Children are the most open and susceptible up till the age of 5. So should they only read or hear Prabhupada's books? Here she's saying also my books. Or can they read storybooks, Karmi storybooks, and DVDs like what she sees at other devotees' homes on the shelves? Well, I'll just give a answer, and then I think there's a greater point here also to address. But Srila Prabhupada was pretty unequivocal about what he wanted children to read, and he just wanted them to read and hear his books. He certainly didn't mention Sri Ram Swami's books, but he just wanted his books. In addition to that, we add many other Vaishnavacharya's books, or now we have Krishna conscious storybooks for kids. I would say that those fall in the same vein, that they're all meant to help children become Krishna conscious, because not only children, but then at any age, whatever you put in your mind, that's what your mind becomes, and it stays in your mind. So ultimately, Krishna consciousness means that Mame Kam Saranam Braja, you have nothing else in your mind except Krishna. When there's all these other things get put into the mind, then unfortunately, you have to spend a lot of your Krishna consciousness cleaning out what you put in, or in this case, what the parents may have put in. So, best not to. And of course, it wasn't, Prabhupada didn't stop there at little children, but at older children, they should just learn from his books. And then ultimately, same goes with adults. Whatever goes in, stays in. Of course, when it comes to education, and you have compulsory education topics that have to be studied compulsory from certain books, and you can't replace it with a Krishna conscious curriculum, then what can be done? We're obliged to follow the law. But nonetheless, we should be aware that that doesn't mean that the children won't have problems with having to later on try to purify and free themselves from all of those things. Now, here's the greater principle that I wanted to talk about, is that Prabhupada has given us many instructions. Some of these are unequivocal, like this one. Children should only read his books. Or you can expand that somewhat to children should only read Krishna conscious subject matter. Prabhupada then, on other topics, gave multiple statements. But in any case, when Prabhupada says one thing and we do something else, how do we explain that away? How do we deal with or ignore Prabhupada's statement or shove it to the side, or we explain it away, try to rationalize it? As followers of Prabhupada, our business is to do what Prabhupada says. So when Prabhupada says devotees, children should only hear Krishna conscious subject matter, now how do we deal with that statement and at the same time give them something else? Of course, that's relevant in terms of this discussion here, but how are you going to explain it to your children when, as they grow up and they read Prabhupada's books, they say, why did you have me read these other things? Many may not. Many may just accept it. But some children, especially the Krishna-conscious ones, may raise the question, why did you give me storybooks? So, if we continue that thing, there are many topics today. Here's a philosophical one. What is the origin of the jiva? Prabhupada says no one falls from Vaikuntha and says that we came from Vaikuntha. So if we just select one of those statements, then what do we do with the other? We can't just be selective about what Prabhupada says. We have to be able to give explanations that satisfy all of Srila Prabhupada's statements. And of course there are many such things, so there has to be a balanced and overall understanding and presentation of, can we be eclectic and just pick and choose things that we want from Srila Prabhupada's books, or do we actually formulate understandings? Or here's another one, for instance, topical one on women being called Prabhu. And Srila Prabhupada called some of his disciples Prabhu, but what about all the many other places and times when Prabhupada also called women Mataji, or in his books says that all women should be dealt with as mother, should be called mother, and therefore we call them Mataji. So how do you balance both of those things? You don't just pick one, but then both. We need an explanation that satisfies all of those. So this is very important in order to actually understand and preserve Srila Prabhupada's legacy. Otherwise, as we start to qualify Srila Prabhupada's statements more and more, then the whole tenure or the whole vision of our movement changes. In Srila Prabhupada's time, he wanted all of his devotees to be cleanly shaven on their head, and of course, what to speak of their face. Now that's no longer there. Why do devotees have no sikhas? Why do they walk around sikhaless? Buddhists are the ones with no sikhas. How do you explain that in light of Srila Prabhupada's instruction? And if we say, well, I'm going to ignore Prabhupada's instruction, okay. But then we have to be very clear about that, that we're, if we ignore too many of Prabhupada's instructions, then we're no longer following Srila Prabhupada. And then here's a second part of her question, which was about whether ladies should wear saris or long skirts along with kurti and dupatta. In Srila Prabhupada's time, Prabhupada taught us to wear saris, and this long skirt and other combination was a later introduction. I don't I don't think that it's necessarily something that is certainly of the same category as the previous question about what children should wear here. No doubt you can't go wrong by just wearing saris, but even if ladies wear long skirts and that other combination, the idea of both is that they're well covered, and that women wear clothes that are both attractive but at the same time chaste. They don't expose themselves. But nowadays, whether with sari or other dress, it's become quite fashionable, especially with newer generations, to expose as much of their bodies as possible, have cholis as high up as possible, as low cut as possible, and dresses hanging as low as possible, so it no longer, and of course, and the head's not covered. So, is it really the issue of a sari or a long dress, or is the issue of how these things, what function are they actually serving, and do they really represent a society in which we believe that women should be chastely dressed and should cover themselves, or they should expose themselves? And if wearing a sari is a way of exposing as much as possible, then what's the point? So I think that's the would be the real essence, and that this would be more of a detail of devotional service than really a principle. Hare Krishna.